All right, everybody, welcome to the Frontside Podcast. What episode is this?
I think it's episode four.
It's episode four.
We might have missed a couple. Six. Yeah, we're like week six or seven, episode four.
Okay.
As you do. We made it to episode four, though, so that's not insignificant.
That's something.
Because episode three is the one that you usually die on, and I can see why. Because people talk about, like, there's a really great line from Adventure Time about sucking at something is the first step to being kind of good at something. And it's really hard to record these and then go listen back and realize, okay, it's okay to suck at this for a little while you get good at it. Not saying to anyone listening that the previous episodes have sucked, but it does feel like you suck at it. And it takes a while to get better at it and have it be sort of natural. And so it seems like three is the one that I've had many experiments of mine in the past have died at the number three. It's a very dangerous number for someone trying to do something that doesn't suck.
Yeah,
because
that's true.
For those three, it definitely does.
And the thing is also it's a good time to, if you don't like doing something and you realize that getting good at this is not something that I ever want to do, and I'm not interested in making that investment, then you can actually intentionally kill it at three. Three is a good time to just stick a knife in it.
Yeah. So, but we've decided to continue to hobble along. So welcome along for episode four of Frontside the Podcast,
yep.
A journey into people being willing to suck at something.
Yeah. And in fairness, there's actually been quite a bit going on, you went out to Mountain West JS.
Yep.
We both went to EmberConf.
Beautiful Atlantic City, Utah, as it's called.
Atlantic City, is it a gum? There's a lot of gambling there?
No, there's
Donald
no gambling.
Trump, no Trump Tower?
And I'm the only one that calls it that.
Okay.
So, yeah, Salt Lake City. Gave a talk that I'll have an opportunity to give again at RailsConf. Man, there is a lot going on.
Yeah, no, this has been turned into a very...
That's what they call it, conference season.
Is it?
I don't know who calls it that, actually. That again, might just be me.
Okay.
So I have heard people say conference season is upon us. So sort of in the style of Game of Thrones, which, again, I'm referencing very dangerously at the risk of having you kind of explain Game of Thrones to me and then spoil it.
Conference season is coming. Always have your talks prepared.
Yeah. So I have I had a good talk. It was fun. No videos online. We'll bug people about it and throw it in the show notes once it is. But
I thought you threw it up on the.
I do have slides.
Website.
I'll throw.
Okay,
I'll
right,
throw slides. Just... I'll throw the slides up, I guess, in the show notes, and then you're working on all kinds of crazy stuff. You're working on a talk for RailsConf.
Yep, I'm working on a talk for RailsConf. I'm going to be giving a slimmer version of it at AustinJS next week.
Wow.
So I'm really excited about that. I don't want to give too many spoilers, but it's just going to be amazing.
People's minds are going to be blown inside out by the power of the scripts of Java.
Mm-hmm.
And RailsConf said, yes, we need that. I'm sorry, what?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It'll be fun. Your talk and my talk are back to back.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be really fun.
Yep. We're going to – Frontside's going to rule it for 90 minutes at RailsConf.
Yeah.
They're going to be like, yep.
That'll be fun.
Sick of us after, after that.
And yeah, I mean, and also then we had our big week at EmberConf, and that's kind of what I wanted to talk about today. Like, it was huge, and I think we should just kind of dive right in. And we've had now, very intentionally, we delayed this podcast so that we would have time to sort of digest what we learned at EmberConf. We didn't want to be one of those like news outlets that races to the phone booth directly out of the press conference. We wanted to take
absolutely.
Time.
Absolutely. That is an excellent rationalization.
We're journalists, if nothing else, here. So,
I was really, really pleased with it. So, I mean, I certainly have things that were my favorite about it. What was your favorite thing or set of things that fall into the general pool of things that you really, really liked?
So, I thought... So there were a few things that really stuck out to me, but I loved the tone that was set at the conference. I think it was set for the Ember community in general, and I think people that were there got a sense of why people label the Ember community as different, as somewhat it sticks out in a way that hasn't happened since the Rails community kind of came to hit critical mass where people said, wow, this is actually a little different. What's going on here? And there's something worth investigating. I think the Ember community has started to reach that critical mass. And so and it came right out at the beginning where Yehuda and Tom came out on stage and said, we're going to have an uncomfortable conversation. And it was important to have the uncomfortable conversation because the community is reaching its awkward teenage years where you're about to have some sort of meltdown at a conference. So they know exactly, and instead of glossing it over and saying, hey, everybody just be cool to each other, why can't we all just be cool and bro down? It was the opposite. It was, hey, we trust and love each one of you, but we're still going to have this awkward conversation. We're still going to explain to you about the birds and the bees of you know, conference awkwardness.
Because interaction, yeah.
Yeah, because it, like, and nobody took any offense. It was actually really encouraging to say, hey, we're going to have some difficult conversations up front about what it means to be a community.
Right. And, yeah, and it was really well done, and it was not, it wasn't preachy or sanctimonious in any way. It was very humble.
It felt like leadership to me. Like, it felt like people that were getting out in front of something and saying, these are our standards as a community, and they involve, everybody kind of reaching a certain minimum standard of human behavior, and if they don't reach that, they'll be held to task for it. And that's a really touchy topic about whether people are like or dislike codes of conduct at a conference. And I feel like they dealt with it extremely well, and I feel like everybody that was there would have agreed. It was impressive. That's a delicate line to walk in. I feel like they did it well, and it. Just that beginning, and then watching it's pretty hug-oriented development. Not everybody's into hugs, but it was pretty huggy. there are pictures that people say signified the conference that involved hugs, and I tend to agree. So I would say the tone of the conference first and foremost. For me, as a person who's all like humanistic or whatever,
right.
Like so before the first thing that came to mind to me, before anything amazing technical, that was the first thing that came to mind. There was something weird about it that set it apart.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there was feeling I got, which, you know, some people in talking with, they're like, oh, there was a lot of vaporware
and it's true. There really was. Like, you can't argue with that. There was a lot of vaporware at EmberConf.
That's
true.
There
was a lot of things that were
but
coming soon.
Right. But I basically bought what I thought it was transparent vaporware. So the example being, it's like, here's the progress that we've made and here's why we're not satisfied. We're not just going to, you know, slap a stamp on it and send it and ship it.
Okay. Specifically,
well, there are a couple of things. I mean, probably the biggest one that has the biggest expectations around HTML bars. We don't have to go into that one now, but the one that touched on that I was the most interested in was the whole, talk on query params. You know, that's a feature that everybody needs really, really, really yesterday. But I thought it was very telling about the values of the community that, you know, that it actually hasn't shipped. The fact that it is vaporware is a feature. and vaporware is a little bit of a harsh term. There's been numerous functioning prototypes and implementations that it's just been rewritten again and again and again, and each time there's more insight gleaned, and I thought that was a great talk. You know, kind of saying, yes, we haven't shipped this, and here's why. You know, here's the rationale, because, you know, there's more to learn here. And because this is going to be set in stone, and because, you know, any public APIs that we pump out have to be backwards compatible, we want to make sure that they're actually going to solve the problems that people have in a deep way.
That
kind of dedication to quality ripples through the whole framework was very comforting to me.
I could see that being annoying if you were if you're like, hey, wait, so is this like hardcore architecture astronautery? I'm very sensitive to this.
Really?
So when I see it, it makes me so angry. And I was not angered by this. I was really impressed.
Right.
And I had a side conversation with Yehuda about it afterwards. And he, what I didn't realize is how close they came to accepting that first pull request and just merging it. Like, man, it solved a problem. It doesn't feel right, but everybody's clamoring for this. The entire community is saying, ship it. Like, let's just ship it. And they decided not to. And I really feel like design is what you say no to. And they said no at that point to that because it didn't feel right. And they said, well, why doesn't it feel right? And then a theme in the conference sort of emerged out of that, that I wish I could say it correctly. Like, I want to say the right thing, and you can correct me on this, but it was basically that Ember's goal is to take let the easy problems continue to be easy and trivial, and you can get them wrong, but to take the time to solve the hard problems thoroughly and well and correctly, because you really only get one shot at them.
Right, and especially when you have hard problems intersecting with hard problems, you get things that, you need to be thoughtful and mindful. And obviously mindfulness was on display, even if quote-unquote production software wasn't. And that, it sounds like an excuse, but like I said, I don't think there's a lack of productivity in terms of actually, it's not like the code isn't being written, but, good things take time. And in the meantime, there's lots of workarounds.
Yeah, I felt like that emerged like three times in three things. So we talk about all the vaporware. Like, there are three things that are like, why don't I have these things now in this framework? And what it turns out is not because people aren't working very hard on them. And also thanks for that, open source entitlement, by the way.
Right.
Like, where's my new stuff is a pretty weird thing to say to people who are donating their spare time and asking family and friends to sacrifice that time, which actually kind of wound up being another recurring theme in the conference that I was really impressed by, was a recognition of the sacrifices of people in open source, and particularly the spouses and families who are leasing out essentially these family members so that they can contribute to a community and kind of participate in doing something that feels pretty cool and important and certainly something that benefits a lot of people.
Right. Yeah, no. I came away from it feeling very comforted that, we're leaning on this community very, very hard. And there was a lot of tonality that came out of it that I was attuned to. Tuned to tonality. There's a perfectly circular statement, but in terms of being accepting, mm-hmm. in terms of dedication to quality and gratitude, obviously we're all values of the community. I came away feeling good. And there was also a lot, as I just said, there was a lot of good technical content too.
Yeah, there was, there were, naturally, actually, I really liked Ryan Florence's talk about components.
Come on, it had a drone. Of course, yeah. You don't like it.
I kind of ding it a point for having a drone.
Really?
I
guess the drone really flew right. It was right over my head, so it made an impact. But
I see.
I don't know.
At a JavaScript conference, a drone is like, I don't know.
It's the Michael Bay of JavaScript conference talks.
Well, it would if it exploded. That would if the drone exploded, awesome. It would be the Michael Bay move. But it's become like I see it at every conference now, because they've written some really cool libraries for it in JavaScript, and that JavaScript has to prove something maybe by mm-hmm. saying, hey, we're not just on the web, we're embeddable, blah blah blah.
Right.
It's cool.
But you're right. It was obviously it was actually the way that they organize components at Instructure was one of the most interesting things, and like I actually liked his bit about decomposing the components into components that cooperate with each other. So, the example that he used was the menus and the tabs and a couple other things where you actually don't pass a data structure to a single component that builds out the HTML. Instead, have a bunch, decompose your super component into like 2, 3, 4 cooperating subcomponents that tell each other,
Yeah, I'd like to see more examples of that.
Yeah, it reminded me, it's like a DSL for behavior. So in the same way that you've got, a gem file or your routes,
right?
You have a DSL there, so what he was building with components was a DSL for a tabbed interface. So saying, here's a tab, but you had to imperatively call the tab helper. Or the tab component.
And yeah, I think and components got a lot of play at the conference, and it made me feel not as isolated, Because what we're doing with components, not a lot of other people are doing, which is using components to refactor existing applications toward Ember. Mm-hmm. But everybody seems collectively very excited about components, like about their potential and about what they do. And there are certainly are doubters out there that think components are like, oh, that we're recycling, you know, 15-year-old ideas, and it's binding together behavior and data in weird ways or whatever. But it feels, when you use them, it feels like a good layer of abstraction.
Feels right, yeah.
And so I've become a huge fan of this over the course of time, and it wasn't a foundational piece of Ember. Components were kind of added in later. But I really feel like the community is starting to get behind it. And you're going to see something interesting happen this year with components. Had some cool conversations with people about, you know, why is it so hard to find out if somebody's already written a component for something that I'm currently writing? Like, that's super weird. This should be something that's shareable, that's known. But again, it's the early days of this framework. I bet this was really true of people writing Rails plugins, you know, 8 years ago. And before people figured out that, okay, we'll put it in Ruby gems and post it to this thing, and Ruby Toolbox will index these things. And there's a really cool precedent now for this type of code sharing. And I'm excited to see what happens with Ember components over the next 6, 8, 12 months.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there were a lot there. I thought also the talk on flows was also very interesting. I hadn't really considered it, and I hadn't I mean, obviously we've all dealt with application flows, but I don't remember what the name of the talk was or who it was that gave it, but,
Nathan Hammond.
Okay. But how they'd actually formalized their flows in terms of an actual separate object, that was cooperating with the rest of the Ember runtime. And, you know, that maybe the runtime, well, obviously the runtime is never complete, but, there might be a whole kind of missing subcomponent or subsystem in the terms of flows that might end up making it into the core. You know, if it does, it probably will be, we'll see it in some other form than what we saw at the conference, but it was at least really good to get a peek at that mode of thinking.
It certainly precedes, and it's weird that I don't think people do this enough when they're designing web applications. And it's certainly very tempting for people who've built a lot of database-backed web applications, that you start with your data model and work your way up to the user interface. Mm-hmm. And and you wind up having been painted into a corner enough times that you sort of learn to start with flows. But it's weird that web applications, because they're stateless, maybe they don't lend themselves very well to being coded into a flow. Right. It's weird. So basically flow is saying, this is like you have a big state machine that its job is to allow a person to traverse this graph.
The edges of these
and
graphs.
And it carries a state with it. And that actually is representative of most people's experience of using web applications. Maybe not a website per se, that's just a collection of HTML links, but a real web application is going to have this state that follows a user around and changes as they move from point to point. That it is a really interesting concept, and it's something I don't think enough people do at the outset of their web applications. Like, it feels almost like you should I don't want to turn into like code generation guy, because if you remember how horrible that was from turning your like UML into
I remember
schema or whatever, but like I can almost see those mapping so closely that you could generate one from the other. Like, a flow is a really very powerful tool for visualizing how what a person's actual behavior should be on your site, and I don't think enough people do it. So I really liked that. And there's a library that goes with it that I haven't investigated yet. Mm-hmm. That looked really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And it looked really nice, and it looked like defining the flows was pretty straightforward. Once again, just another model, just modeling your flow. So yeah, those were probably my favorite talks, or the most memorable.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, including me, loved Eric Berry's testing talk.
Mm-hmm.
It's really fun. I hope he gives it some more. the tools that he references in there are really QUnit centric, and that's been hard for us.
Yeah, although based on what our discovery yesterday, I don't think the problems that we've been running into were the fact that we're not using QUnit.
Right. It's just that the path that they continue.
Right. That they're marching forward.
Yeah. They want to keep pushing the envelope. and that the leader in that charge is going to be Q unit, and it means the community is going to have to pick up the slack for,
right,
for other testing tools.
Right.
It's probably the number one design decision of Ember that I like the least is their choice of test framework. And I know that's like the douchiest thing to say. Like,
yeah,
choosing, oh, they didn't choose my favorite test framework, but I find Q unit so appallingly awful in its syntax.
You know, so Jeffrey and I ran a spike yesterday, and we did the Q unit BDD.
Mm-hmm.
And that was fairly pleasant. It supported nested setup.
It does do nested context.
It does do nested context. And it's...
Okay, I find myself less appalled
now. The assertion DSL is not as rich as Chai, it's certainly adequate. There's no jQuery support for it, but most
of
them...
But you have jQuery. So you can,
what's that?
You have jQuery.
You have jQuery, but you don't have jQuery matchers out of the box. So
I don't care about that so much.
Yeah, it's not as big of a deal. It was I guess it was not as tooth grindy.
Okay.
As kind of stock QUnit. So
you say now that I actually require dental work from the last time you trying to use QUnit. So.
Yeah. And then the other good news is I actually looked at the Ember QUnit code. Actually referenced in his talk,
like QUnit or what is it? QUnit BDD or
no,
something?
It's QUnit BDD is
Ember QUnit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So QUnit BDD is completely unrelated to
sorry,
yeah,
Ember. I'm an Ember QUnit,
and it did not look like it would be that difficult to adapt. So I don't know if we'll be the ones to actually do that, but
well, I'm glad. I was just glad to see. I think we manufacture testing into this moral imperative where if you don't test, you're a bad person. And that's I get why people do that, but I feel like that's the last resort of a person who has no more logical arguments to make, is to make it into a religion. And so I'm contrarian about it by nature. Mm-hmm. I really like testing. I like the feeling I get of like knowing that my code works, and I've experienced some of the benefits of test-driven development. I found it in JavaScript land and particularly in Ember land to be so painful at times that I would not be as into it as I would do it, but it'd be very painful.
Right.
And there would be times where it became so painful that I wasn't able to do it anymore. And especially imagine single developers kind of on their own trying to stay up with this stuff.
Yeah.
It's like we're lucky to have a team of people to bounce this stuff off of, but not everybody has that. And so it's really cool for me to see the community start instead of building up a culture of kind of looking down on people about not testing, like I've seen in other communities, or a culture of screw it, we don't test.
Right.
There's a culture of, all right, if people aren't testing, it's a bug in the way the testing is implemented. It must be easier than this. And that attitude tends to pervade the Ember community. If something is confusing, it's a documentation bug or an assertion bug in the code. Like if you get an error and it doesn't give you a meaningful message, that's a bug. So things are treated as a bug. And I feel like I'm seeing that kind of attitude emerge in testing. If things are hard to test, it means that there needs to be some work done to make it easier to test. I think Rails actually set a pretty good precedent for that. And it's fun to see that happen in Ember as well.
I could not agree more.
You're supposed to argue with me on some of this stuff.
Well, I could say, you know, I don't think you're a bad person for not testing, but I will kill you. Anyway. No, but
tell me about because there were parts of it I didn't quite understand and I was trying to pay attention, but my brain was already so tired. But this guy's application, I forgot his name. He's Mute Winner on Twitter. But he built that app store,
right,
web app.
Right.
And out of all the conference, this one stands out to me because I'm a product person. I love products. There was so much amazing, cool backend stuff he was doing to make that happen.
You know, I feel terrible. I don't know why, but I missed the first half of his talk.
Okay.
I missed like the first 12 minutes where he was talking about the backend stuff. And I only got in once he kind of had walked through the building of his application, and I just saw
it was my favorite
integration.
Talk from
yeah, no, it
premise
was...
to execution. Like on the technical side to presentation,
mm-hmm.
it was my favorite talk of the show. That and one other one I'll talk before we go. But You know the premise of the application, right? Where it was like his setup for it was, you get a giant box on your screen that has a million lines of text in it, and it says external request from application blurb blurb.
Right.
And you're like, oh, okay, I know what this is. And his whole point was like, sweet, an application or a link from iTunes application. Said no one ever. So let's talk about designing a complete thorough replacement for the experience for what happens instead of clicking that application and going into the app store's just horrible,
awful, yeah.
Horrible user experience. So let's design something that actually is user focused instead of whatever it is now. And see if we can do it by the web, consuming their APIs. And by consuming their APIs, he built an Ember application that's actually better.
Yeah, far better. More responsive, like yeah, you can in terms check it of out. Actual performance.
Yep.
It's
called fnd.io. So find.io with no vowel in the, you know, the drop vowel in the word, which is the cool web. I guess it's web 2.0, but.
It's like the vowels in the top level domain name, man. Deal with it.
But it was fantastic. And he was doing a couple of things with Ember that I thought were really interesting. One of them was dynamically generating routes, which I've never seen that before. I'd never really thought about it before.
Yeah.
And by doing so, you can type in, for instance, you could just give it a product URL with a product ID and not tell it whether it's an artist or whatever, but it will resolve and redirect you to the right location. So it will say, okay, you put in this thing, but it's a Shakira album. It will resolve like artist/Shakira.
So I guess like you said, I think I walked in right as he was talking about the dynamic routes. But why wouldn't you have like a catch-all or a essentially what amounts to a method missing instead of statically generating all these routes?
It's a good question. I don't know if the domain called for it. I don't remember all the details of it.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing that he was doing that I found really fascinating was he was using he was tying together Ember data to
iTunes, right?
To
iTunes. Like a bunch of other different services. Like I remember you said, like, man, it sounds like I missed the wrong talk.
Yeah, well, it'll be on video, and
yeah,
I'll have to link it up.
That he was really working the custom adapters and serializers, and
yeah, it was flipping awesome. And
you can check it out for yourself. FND.io. It really was. It really was nice.
Yeah. The other one that I loved was Deveris Brown's Embers for the Children, where he was talking about using Ember to teach. So he comes from the South Side of Chicago. He's really familiar with people that don't live with all the same kind of privilege that we take for granted. And anyway, it was a really amazing talk. When this comes online, like I'm going to promote it like crazy. I hope everybody else does. It's an important talk for people who are in software development to kind of try and remember, like, not everybody in the world, like, we complain about Uber pricing or whatever. Like, when you see people in our bubble complaining about the things we complain about, I hope people get a weird feeling in their stomach, like, hey, we're, like, complaining about weird stuff. Because there are people that basically he was talking about in San Francisco. He's at Zendesk. In San Francisco, there's, like, 6% unemployment. But among the Tenderloin, which is the not as nice part of San Francisco, it's like 30%. It's just ridiculous. Like some among certain demographics.
Is that where he did most of the work on which the talk was based?
Yeah. So he brings in people who from I think he lives in Oakland. I want to say, but he brings in people from around the community and teaches them beginning programming. And interestingly, he's teaching them Ember. And so there are a couple of things that are interesting about that. One is like it's really impressive the way that he does it, the way that he takes each individual person's story into account, the way that he remembers that this is a person who's like maybe this kid hasn't eaten today, so like maybe this person had to take 2 hours of bus rides. They're not going to be on time. They don't have all the same goofy privileges that we have. But and the other part of it that was weird is that everybody that knows Ember has an opportunity to teach people like a really marketable skill, and getting through to these kids with that and the results that he's had have been incredibly positive. And he was basically saying he was using the docs on the Ember site directly, basically, to teach these kids. And that to me was really impressive. And I feel like that's part of the benefit of a framework. And when people get mad about frameworks, I hope that they are not forgetting that frameworks kind of open up software development. It certainly Rails opened up the opportunity for me to learn web development when I didn't have a background as a developer. And so I feel like Ember, over the course of the next year or two, is going to open up JavaScript client-side development to people in the same way. I really feel like that. And so it was really cool to see.
Yeah. Is he going to kind of raise or replicate it within the community so that people kind of give people a framework to go out and do this for themselves? Or is it?
I think making people aware of it was maybe. It seemed like that may have been as far as he's thought about it yet, but it seemed like this is something that ought to be imitated and replicated and maybe even sort of repackaged into Rails Girls has done that really well for and Rails Bridge have done that really well for, you know, women who code initiatives. And I feel like something like this for teaching kids to code is pretty cool. Like I love he at one point he's like trying to explain the DOM to a kid. Just imagine that. Explain the concept of the DOM to a kid. Well, it's a tree structure, but it's visually represented. Oh, my gosh. Like, that would be horrible. So, anyway, hats off to him for making the attempt of it. Because, like, who does that? Who just goes, all right, I'm going to do this now?
Yeah.
And anyway, that was probably – those were my two favorite things at the conference.
Yeah. No, that was definitely good. I guess that's about it for this week. There was a whole lot and more. So
yeah,
I really hope that the videos come out soon.
Yeah. So we get for missing too much stuff. There's more, even more stuff in the community to talk about. And anyway, yeah, we've had a really great time at EmberConf. For anybody that wasn't there, which it seemed like everybody was there, but for anybody that missed it, I definitely recommend that particular conference. If it was your first conference, it's a great conference. Even if you don't care about Ember, there were people there that had a great talk by one of the Mozilla guys, David Herman, and he came in and he's not an Ember guy.
Oh, yeah.
That was an amazing talk.
That was fantastic.
That's one more thing. One last thing that I'll leave people with as a piece of homework is he played a clip from the show, a PBS documentary, Code Rush. If you have not seen Code Rush, it's on YouTube in its entirety, and it is amazing. It's one of the best documentary pieces about software development I've ever seen. And it's really prescient, actually. Some of the people talk about the state of the – it's all from the year 99 to 2000. And some people talk about the state of the internet at that point and where they think it's going to go. And there were some people saying, you know, it could go the way of television and centralized control in the hands of just a few people. And that's what Mozilla is here to prevent. When they started Mozilla was that they wanted to fight that sort of centralization of control of the internet. And now with all this talk about Mozilla and its mission, I feel like it was more important than ever. So, and the documentary is just really entertaining. I definitely recommend checking out Code Rush.
Yeah, I definitely will.
Okay.
All right.
Awesome. Have a great week.
See you next week.
Okay.